You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Hello, hello. It's Brooke Devard, and you're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. Very special episode for today. I'm speaking to Esme Brown. Esme is, she's really fascinating. I was trying to think of the right term. She's a very fascinating young woman. She is a writer, and she's been through a lot. And we talk about some of the stuff that she's been through, so I should say that there's kind of some sensitive material discussed in this episode, if you're kind of sensitive to that, but it's real. And again, when I think about why I created this podcast and why it's important to me, it's to facilitate these difficult discussions that frankly don't come up in small talk, dinner party conversation. We have to have a space for that. It's essential. And I think that it's so brave of people to tell their story and to not kind of edit out the difficult parts and just kind of skip to the highlights. And Esme's got a story to tell. But she's gorgeous. She's covered in tattoos, but she has this very kind of classic beauty look. And all of her tattoos have a meaning. So in the episode, we kind of talk about what each of them mean. She has this really great Basquiat tattoo. And she actually has a kind of interesting relationship with Basquiat. I guess not her directly, because of course she was not even born yet when Basquiat was alive and at the height of his career. But her father had a close relationship with him, and Basquiat would come over in the middle of the night and kind of look to him for advice and guidance and talk to him about his work. She has a complicated relationship with her father, who dealt with mental illness and substance abuse. I kind of feel uncomfortable talking about it because I feel like it's really her story to tell. And he passed away. He addresses it in this episode, but just, I think vulnerability is such a beautiful trait in people. She's overcome a lot. You know, you see a beautiful person. Esme is a gorgeous kind of bubbly blonde. And I'd say that most people probably look at her and assume that she hasn't gone through anything in her life, but she's overcome a lot to become the woman she is today. Esme is currently working on a selection of essays and poems, which I am so looking forward to reading when they come out. But Esme actually sent me one of her poems. She handwrites everything, but she sent me this one that I'll read, and it's called Chaperones. I took a car home tonight from the other side of the water. My driver was soft, purring. What do you do? I write, I said. What do you write? Poetry, I said. But now a book, because you can tell moments in poetry, but not a whole story. I was wrong. You can tell more of a story in a poem than you ever can with prose. What's your book about? Drug abuse and mental illness. Nonfiction. Autobiographical, if you will. I grew up with a family member who suffered from both. Authors write mostly about what pulls their heartstrings, about what they know. It's personal, he said. Catharsis. I trailed off. The air was cold on my face as I cracked the window. Speeding over the bridge, I thought, I wonder if he knows that my book is about me. I am sitting here with Esme Brown, and it's another Spence girl because I just talked to Hannah, so I feel like I'm just like dipping into the Spence well. You live full-time in L.A. now, mm-hmm. and I think the last time I saw you was in L.A.
Yeah.
at Soho House just randomly.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And you said you've been living in LA for 8 years?
I've been living in LA for 8 years. Actually, weirdly enough, someone recently asked me and I was like, oh, four. And my mom was like, eight. And I was like, oh my God. Like, has it really been 8 years? Which just makes me feel so old. I'm like,
Oh my gosh, stop. Like, how old are you?
Just turned 27.
Oh my gosh, you're so old.
Which I'm really, I actually think 27 is like the chicest age. I'm very excited about
age.
It. Because I feel like I can now say I'm in my late 20s.
Exactly.
And it's sexy.
Exactly. What's been most noticeable to you in terms of New York? I mean, you're a New Yorker. You grew up here. You've been here your whole life. And then now you're in LA, West Coast, very different. What do you think the biggest difference is between New York and LA?
Fame and finance.
Interesting.
So I would say, well, fame is a beast there that can't be tamed. And very often, you know, you even see, I even see friends of mine who have gotten into this sort of media world where they have a relationship with their phone. Mm. And it's very much more out there, and everyone moves there for, you know, opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I just, coming from a place where finances are much more important, you know, this is a poor example, but in a club in New York, the guy getting the most attention is probably the one who spent the most on the table. Versus in LA, the guy getting the most attention is probably broke, but probably sold someone's sex tape. You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't matter if it's negative or positive.
Right.
Fame is the beast that cannot
That's the
be tamed.
Currency. That's
and it's
interesting.
And it's all over.
I don't know if I could do, like, I don't, I feel like it would get to me.
Oh, I hate it. I moved there because I needed a change after high school and I wanted to go to Europe, but my father grew up in LA, so it was always a second home for me. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed pretty easy. And, you know, one thing I have to say is the standard of living is incredibly different. I remember, you know, in high school, I think I was spending so much just to get to and from high school. It's like the expense of New York is so wild. And so every time I've wanted to move back, I'm like, oh, but I'm giving up all my space. Like, I
yeah.
have so much space there. And it's
yeah.
that's so important to me because I'm like a homebody. So like space and aesthetics is something I like need to be around at all times.
Totally understand that. One thing that we have in common, two things. We both love to cook and we both love Pilates. And you were like always like on the reformer making these great videos. I'm obsessed. Do you have a reformer at home or are you going to a studio to do that?
So I found this amazing. I never worked out outside of the house. Like I had gym memberships for years and I just am not, I hate working.
Yeah.
I fucking hate it. So besides playing tennis, I had maybe trainers come to the house once in a while. And eventually I saw online via Instagram, I saw a few of my friends working out with this woman. Her name's Betsy Parker, Parker Pilates on Instagram. She's just amazing.
Okay.
And she created a studio in her garage and it's just so warm and welcoming. And like, it really is like, it's like Pilates meets therapy session. Like, you know, she's just like the most fun
yes.
woman in her 60s and just, she's seen it all
yeah.
and it's like just great. And honestly, when I moved out to LA a few years ago, I put on 40 pounds. Very quickly.
Really?
I was sober and I didn't know how to navigate also the change your body goes through as a woman at around 22, where it's like you do start to put weight in different areas, but it was just so, I just lost control. And it's been years for me to get it off and I still am working on it, but like I've just become so, it's just the best feeling ever. Because I also have like back problems. I just think Pilates, like yoga is too slow for me. I don't
me
like
too.
Cardio. It like kills me. But Pilates is just like every time I leave, I feel balanced,
same,
stronger. It's just such a great workout.
Yeah. And I love that you get to work on your posture because that's
everything.
Such an important thing. Yeah.
Well, she has like, she's had some big basketball players, for instance, recently come to work out with her. And all of them were like, we've never worked out like this in our life. Because it isolates such, like people don't realize how isolated you get like muscle-wise and
Absolutely.
Pilates. Like you really are covering parts that you would normally never cover.
Yeah.
It's really, I love it. I
yeah.
love it. I have to, I was never that person that said I love working out and I fucking
Even
love
Pilates.
Working out.
How many times a week do you go?
I try to go like 3 or 4.
Oh, that's really
She has
good.
A very busy schedule, but she's 5 minutes away from me and tries to squeeze me in.
That's really good.
That's great.
And so So you mentioned that you got sober around 22.
I went out to LA. I went to rehab. I got sober at 19.
Oh, 19. Okay.
And there was,
and what did you go to rehab for?
I went to rehab for, I think, a bunch of different reasons. I was coping with, undiagnosed PTSD. Mm. And, I really just kind of fell off the map. My last years of high school, I did not do well. I was very unhappy. I was a bad user. And, you know, I do believe in addiction. I believe some people really can't touch substances, and I totally understand that. But there's also a level that's slightly below addiction, which is just an abuser, and that I think is really about coping skills. And it did take me a few times, and it took me, I went back twice to rehab to figure it out. And wow. Once I got really to the root of sort of dealing with trauma and stuff, I now find no need to cope with
substances.
I'm careful, you know, at the same time, I'm careful. If I'm having a bad night, I don't drink, you know, versus it's like, cause I just know myself. That's just not, right. If it's coping for me, it's not a good idea. But if it's celebratory or with friends, I haven't really had a problem in years. And I'm just like, I'm so grateful for it. Rehab's really great because they're filled with really people who've been everywhere. And it's like, I don't know. I just really had some huge breakthroughs there. And I'm like a huge therapy pusher. I think everyone really? Should really do it at some point.
I've never been to therapy.
Well, I've been recently going to this therapist. A hypnotherapist.
Oh, wow. And what are you trying to get hypnotized about?
So this is, I'm just going to go full honest on this one.
Please.
I'm a very honest person.
That's what this show is all about.
So I had a cutting problem for years.
Okay.
Very bad. And it became to the point that it was an addiction.
Okay.
And about a year ago, I was very concerned that it was getting really out of hand. And I think when you're younger and you have that sort of problem, it might be an attention thing and it's hard to grasp and people don't like to talk about it.
Sorry if this is too personal.
No, nothing do you mind is too personal.
If I ask, I have two questions.
Yeah.
One, what the PTSD was around. Mm-hmm. And then two, when you say you were cutting yourself, do you mean like actually taking like a blade and like cutting your arms or...
I was definitely taking a blade and cutting my arms. I've cut my face. I mean, I've cut a lot of... And to get back to your first question, the PTSD, I would say, you know, the thing about PTSD, which is very often overlooked, is that it's not something you have to get if you go to war or something. Two children can be in the same exact car crash, and one can get it and one might not.
Right.
And what it is... In the most simplest term, is we are all able to access memories, whether they're sad or happy. And if you have PTSD, what happens is those memories can access you. So instead of being able to control a sad memory, it comes to my mind and I can't make it leave. And
it consumes
starts to
you.
Loop. And it starts to loop. And of course, people have it much worse than I do. I don't get startled. I haven't been in war, but it was really important to get that diagnosis because it put a lot of things into perspective that I had been, you know, I thought I had depression for years and it was really something else. And what it comes from is, well, my father passed when I was 15.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he and I had a very complex relationship. He was very, he was like a tyrant in many ways. He was incredibly smart. One of those people who was a Marshall Scholar and, you know, just really across the board brilliant. But I think sometimes when people are really brilliant, it like torments them to, you know, there's certain things. I believe that people who are immensely talented are always missing something in some department. You know,
sure.
You're using 10% of your brain. If you're going to use it on 9% on music, Michael Jackson, then 1% might not be great social skills. You know what I mean? It's like you can't, it all.
Yeah. Something's got to give.
Something's got to give. And so my father was just, I wouldn't say he was unfit to be a father, but he was definitely a serious ride. Mm-hmm.
And so did you guys have a difficult relationship up until the point that he passed?
No, I mean, I was living with him. I think at that time I was very like fearful of what was going on, but also my father had been sick my whole life. So I was very aware of it, but there were definitely, you know, a lot of unresolved issues and I turned to drugs and handled them poorly. And that just basically increased, I think, any sort of blockage I'd had right. with trauma because I just didn't want to deal with it.
And you were only 15?
Yeah. And by the time I'd gone to rehab and all this stuff, that's more trauma on top of trauma.
Right.
Until you get it all out, you know?
Right, right. And so you're 15, you're going through all of this. What were you using? Like, how did you even know how to, like...
So I started, this is so wild. I'm a huge stoner, just so everyone knows.
You're like a chic stoner. I follow you on Instagram.
I smoke from 5:30 a.m. on, but I'm also a writer. And for me, it's like, for me, it's literally breathing. I have high anxiety levels. Like, I can't function. But no, way before I even tried marijuana, I was stealing my father's OxyContin.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know what it was. I thought it was something very minor. And I was like 14 and, you know, just from there, things picked up. I mean, you know, we grew up in a really fast-paced city and people aren't sheltered. And one thing I'll say I'm grateful for is actually in LA, I find that a lot of the kids, although they don't think they were sheltered, were very sheltered. And I can only actually credit that to the fact that we have a transportation system in New York in which our parents don't have to drive us places.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, at 13, I could say, I'm going to Kelly's house.
Yeah.
But my mom had no idea where I was going.
Yeah.
But everyone in LA, until they're 16, they get a car. You're dropped off and picked up. This is before Uber, you know? So it was just different. I think that it was, I'm grateful that I wasn't sheltered as much, but you know, as those things happened, it was very, very easy. And it took quickly to
spiral
calm those sort of needs for coping and, spiral out of, it was very easy for me.
So it was mostly just kind of like prescription pills.
Prescription pills, which like I said, now, you know, I take Xanax every day with one of my medications. These are all things that I used to really have a problem with. And it's like, I'm so lucky that I don't feel any need, which is why I just hope there are people out there who have hope that they might not be addicts. And a lot of people are very pressured into thinking that they're addicts, especially when they go through these programs. And in reality, a lot of people just need to learn better coping skills. I'm a full believer in addiction. However, I do think a lot of people out there who think they are addicts are really, they didn't cope with their problems and they were abusers.
Right.
I've had bad times in my life and I have really appeared like an addict. I mean, I acted like an addict, but I do really think it was abusers. And that's the thing. It's like a lot of people, I get it. They don't want to face their demons.
Right.
So it's better to just stay sober. But you know what? In the end of the day, your demons will always come knocking on your door.
Right.
You know, that's not something you can get away from.
Yeah, you can't hide from it. It's interesting that you bring up this thing about gaining weight when you got sober. I mean, you're absolutely gorgeous now. When I think about what you're like, the toll that drugs take on your physical appearance, I would imagine that getting sober would make you look a lot better. But I also understand, and I don't know what the effect is of like, opiates on your appetite, but like, I don't know if it suppresses your appetite
I mean, I think it didn't, you know, years. I mean, by the time I went to rehab, I mean, it was cocaine, but I think it was mostly, I've always loved food. I mean, seriously, I could eat carbs every day. I love cooking. I have very little control over portions and that's always been a problem.
That's my problem as well.
It's just like, and I also get, I have such high anxiety that I kid you not, I'll order ravioli at a restaurant and, you know, a really fancy restaurant gives you the rudest portion. It's like
4 pieces,
literally 4 pieces. And I'll look at it. And before I even start eating to know if I'll fill up, I'll start panicking that it's not enough.
Oh my gosh.
Like I am an inner fat girl, you know, like it's,
it's so interesting. I told my husband that I think I have this and he thought that I was being dramatic, but I was like,
food
this
addiction.
Binge eating disorder.
Yeah.
Where you can't stop. It has nothing to do with how full you are. Like I'll just keep going.
There will be nights. I want to get to a point in which working out and stuff, like my main goal was to get to a point in which I could enjoy a pasta on a night without feeling like I was cheating myself.
Yes.
And just kind of like, you know, I remember being, I used to eat a ton as a high schooler, but I just was a string bean, you know, it was a total string bean.
Yeah, you were always so skinny.
Such a string bean. Now I'm a natural G. I mean, like we just,
oh my gosh, wait,
out.
Your boobs are real?
A real G.
Oh my God.
Peter, Carrie, my best friend and I weighed them. They're 5 pounds each.
Oh my God.
I mean,
but you're
horrendous.
So slim. I mean, you have, Yeah. Oh my gosh. On it. That's amazing. I wish I had big boobs.
They are the biggest headache. They are the biggest headache.
Stop I have it. To buy Girls with dresses. A full chest say that.
But. No, but fashion tits are the way to go because every dress I get, I have to get two sizes bigger
and then take it in.
Like there's nothing.
Good
that,
problem to have. Good problem to good have. Problem yeah, like I have to take in the waist because my.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay,
it's a good
fine,
problem
fine,
to have.
Fine, fine. I'll take that. But yeah, no, I have a problem where at least, you know, even if I'm eating well all week, come Sunday, it's like cheat day. But cheat day for me is like once I order pizza,
yeah, it's just a
then
spiral.
I order two pastas, yeah. Then in an hour I order diner food. And I'll, oh, wow. By the end of the day, have eaten like so much I feel ill. And I'm like, right. What's wrong with
yeah.
me?
No,
like,
it's so funny. I mean, I was just talking about this. I think
it's such a real thing.
It doesn't happen to me often. And also the thing that I noticed is it's not necessarily about unhealthy food. I can do it with healthy food.
Yeah.
And it's just it's, like, I'm already full, but I just have this like compulsion to eat. And it's really, I actually want to figure out how to, maybe that's something I can hypnotherapy
heard this thing
for.
Years, well, hypnotherapy has honestly changed my life. I used to really not take to it, but as long as you believe in it, it really works. And of course, when you're under hypnosis, you would assume that it's a very weird thing. You're totally aware. You can absolutely get up and sit up during the meeting and be like, I'm done. You can snap yourself out of it. But if you allow it to go through, it really works.
Okay. So what I want to know is, so you're 22 and you've gained weight because you're now sober.
Right.
How have you, I feel like for the most part in my life, I've been plus or minus like 7 pounds my whole life.
Right.
Or it's like since I can remember buying clothes and stuff. So how much weight did you gain and how different did you feel?
So I started gaining and I have to say also at 22, I think my body was changing in the sense that I've always been a 25 waist, but I could feel my ass was getting really bigger, but also my boobs were getting bigger and I just think my body was naturally
becoming
changing.
A woman, yes.
So like the weight that I put on, I've only tried to take off half of it because realistically I don't want to look like I'm 19 anymore, you know? But no, I started to gain weight and I could notice it. And I think at that age too, when you're gaining weight, it's very obvious. It was all in my tummy. Like it wasn't, mm-hmm. I couldn't hide it. And I just think it became, I had nothing else going. Like I didn't have a job. I was just out of rehab. I was so used to like relying on other things as vices and mm-hmm. food just became, because I loved cooking, it just became a thing.
Good,
and
yeah.
What I do regret the most, which I'll never let happen again, is seeing that first 10 pounds come on and panicking, but not addressing it.
Right.
And so eventually it was like 40 pounds and
wow.
I went up a few sizes and I...
Did you buy new clothes?
I bought a lot of new clothes, which I'm so happy. I'm now like going through my closet and like getting rid of them. And my mom shipped me out some stuff from New York from like high school. And I was like, wow, I feel like I'm shopping in my old closet.
That must be nice.
It's so nice. But more than the clothes, I think it was really just... it sounds very arrogant. I had never been someone scared to be in a bikini.
Right.
You know, and another thing is cellulite genetically. I'm so happy to be talking about this, the female right now. So that's genetic. Can't get rid of it. There's nothing you can do.
I hate that they try to make it seem like you can't. Like,
no, you can't.
They sell
it's just
creams
bullshit. It's
and
like
tools.
And people saying, like, sure, it might help a little, but like if you have cellulite, you have cellulite. So for me, it's not like, oh, you know, if you have a lot, it's worse than a little. You have it. And so. Coming to terms with that as an adult has been pretty wild. I'm just like, oh my God. But no, I think the biggest thing with my weight was that there were 4 years I did not wear a bikini, even in front of like my boyfriend. And it was just like, I would avoid pool parties and it was just like making me miserable. I was really like, I couldn't accept it because I hadn't, maybe if I had been heavier since I was 14, I would have been able to accept it. But because it was so soon, and also in a point in my life where I'm like, I should feel on top of the world right now.
Right.
It was a source of great insecurity for a very long time. But luckily, like I said, I've gotten it a lot off now. And also as I went from 22 to 26, my body did start to curve out mm-hmm. and change and become more womanly. Mm-hmm. And I saw that weight would disperse and that mm-hmm. 40 pounds, like 20 pounds of it was probably coming my way anyway.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
But it definitely feels great to work out because I'm I finally feel like I'm, you know,
taking control,
some muscle, and taking it's so control. Nice.
Yeah, no, it's a great feeling.
I keep telling everyone, like, I have an ab, and my boyfriend was like, no, honey, everyone has abs. They're just underneath. Like, you just have to, it's not like they're there.
Yeah, yeah, there's just like a layer on top of it. Yeah, yeah. Can we talk about your overall style and look? Because I think, I'm going to try to like classify it. I don't know if I have the exact right terminology, but I feel like your style is very like, it's very like high end. It's like the Chanel bag, but with the very basic outfit.
So I live in leggings.
Yes.
I live in leggings.
Okay. I was going to say basic meets chic, but I don't want you to be offended by me saying basic.
Oh my God. No, basic. I love the word basic.
Okay.
Because like I live in basics. Like I don't mind that word at all.
Yes.
Like, I live in fucking basics.
Yeah.
So in LA, my style is a little bit different because everything there is so relaxed that even Soho House, they think if you come in a full, I mean, they don't do it all the time, but during my interview session, they were like, if someone comes from an event in a full suit,
we make like,
them take the
of
jacket
here.
Off. Yeah. Like, so it's such a different town that I realized when I dressed up like this for dinner, I looked weird. Like everything was like too much.
LA's so casual.
Well, you should see when I come back here, I pack bags and like my bags are filled with like fur and python.
Cause you're like,
cause I'm like, yes, I can finally get dressed. But no, my daily uniform, no matter how much stuff I end up investing in, is leggings, Air Force Ones.
Amazing.
And probably some sort of vintage tee. And then must have a Chanel bag.
Yeah. Your bag game is crazy. Like, I feel like you have, like, the most gorgeous bags.
I really make an effort to, like, pick them well. And also, I heard Chanel's going into e-commerce soon.
Oh, really?
Which would bring their company up a lot. And I also know they go up 10% every year. So I actually have a very good relationship with The RealReal.
And I love The RealReal.
It's fantastic.
You mean relationship, like you actually like know them?
I've just been using them for so long that now it's just like second nature.
Oh, did you hit their like benchmark for like if you sell over $75,000 worth, you get?
I did not sell that much, but I'm now at like the 80-20, which is so
amazing.
Great. It's just great. I'm so jealous. I got so used to it. And I'm such a hoarder and I love collecting things. But eventually I was like, I did it one time and I was like, I got to just clean out the closet.
Yeah. We should explain what The RealReal is.
Oh, yes. The RealReal is the most amazing website. It is a consignment-based website.
All designer. Fabulous. Like, you can get Tom Ford, Stella McCartney.
And you can get vintage to brand new. Like, I bought a pair of Givenchy boots, like, 2 months ago. Took my picture in them, like, I had to. And then I realized I was going to break my ankle. And they sell your stuff for a fantastic price. And the best part about it is I've never used eBay. I didn't have a PayPal account and I just never got around to selling stuff that I could sell because it was a hassle.
Yeah.
They come to you.
Exactly.
They pick it up.
Yeah.
They do the whole thing.
They put it
online. You have an online account. Once a month, I get a check, whether that check is...
Oh, I don't even do a check. I just do site credit so I can just continue the cycle.
Oh, see, that's great.
Yeah.
That's a good one too.
I mean, it's kind of defeats the purpose because you're like selling stuff to buy more stuff.
Well, but I'm always using that money to buy stuff anyway. I mean, I sold... The first thing I ever sold was a pair of Celine sneakers and I got less than I thought I was going to get for them. And then I realized, you know what?
If you're not wearing it, it's worth nothing.
$200 in my wallet is better to go towards sneakers I'll wear. You know, it just makes sense.
Exactly.
And they're just a great company. They pick up everything. They package everything. You're on a monthly thing where sometimes I get $10, sometimes I get $2,000, but it's all taken care of.
Yeah.
It's just a brilliant concept.
I'm obsessed. And I was a shopper for a long time before I ever sold anything. But I think clearing out your closet is so important. And I used to be like, oh, like they're not really giving me this much. But if you're not wearing it, it has zero value.
Zero.
The value is zero if you're not using it. So you might as well just sell it.
No, I have like a rule with myself. I clean out my closet quite often. And I have a rule with myself, which is, well, first of all, since losing weight, my rule is I used to like be like, oh, but I love those pants. They're a little big. The second I am too small for a pair of pants, I sell them because I'm not trying to let myself ever have the motivation to like be like, oh, but
I'm
those fit me when
back.
I'm fat. You know, it's like, no. But more than that, it's like it's so important, especially where, you know, we're girls, so we could have five things in our closet or we could have 500 and we still think we have nothing to wear.
So true.
And the more you edit out your closet, it more becomes a boutique for just you.
Mm-hmm. I always think about how when I travel and I have a suitcase with like 10 things in it, it's so easy to get dressed in the morning because they're just a few options.
Well, I mean, people always say, like, how did you deal with a uniform? And I'm like, let me tell you, it was the best fucking thing ever.
It was the best. I wish I had a uniform now.
Yeah, like, it was great. Like, yeah. Dress code at Dwight was just horrific because...
What was
like,
the dress code at Dwight?
Well, it's like, you know, you can wear a polo if it's the Dwight polo. Otherwise, you have to wear a button down. And then you can wear pants, but they can't be denim, which... Back at 17, I have to say there were not very many good trouser options because the trouser like wasn't really in then. Yeah. So like now I wear velvet corduroy. Like I love those things. But back then I would just literally get detention every day because I was like, I don't know what to wear. You know, like besides this, and men have to wear ties. And dress code is to keep things together. But honestly, it's like...
You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Everyone's in different colors anyway. It's just so silly. I just missed the fact that everyone was like white shirt, skirt. That's what you're wearing. It was great. Uniform. I never had to think about it. Plus, the second I had a dress code was also the second I first entered a co-ed school.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm just, you know, all the girls in there aren't wearing makeup. They've been around boys their whole life. And I'm just like panicking. I was like, I got to look perfect at times. You know,
I can't even imagine. Just, I feel like it'd be so distracting to go to school with boys.
It is and it isn't. Dwight was a wild school to go to. I mean, it was really, there were many aspects just beyond just boys that were just so crazy.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
If any of you aren't aware, Dwight is also known as dumb white idiots getting high together.
Yeah, who are some famous Dwight alums?
I know Paris Hilton.
Reed was there. Oh my gosh, yeah. Paris Hilton was there.
Truman Capote, who failed English.
He went to Dwight? I did not know that. Interesting.
And Vin Diesel.
Wow. Mm. The New York City private school scene is...
Like we had Gwyneth Paltrow at ours.
At Spence, yeah. And Kerry Washington, who I think is even cooler.
Much cooler.
Yeah.
Much cooler. Yeah, Gwyneth kind of bothers me.
Yeah. I know. People really hate on Gwyneth. I get it, though.
I don't hate on her. I actually like Goop a lot, so I'm actually more into her now. I just think it was... I you know what it is? It's just when people have such simplistic style... And then everyone gives them these high praises.
Yes, yes.
And that's what bothers me. It's like
she gets more credit than she deserves.
It's like the button down and the jeans and the flats and the blazer. I do it all the time, and I'm not like told I'm a fashion guru.
Right.
It's like that's the part that drives me nuts. It's like credit where credit's deserved.
Yes, yeah.
Goop's amazing.
Yeah, she gets a lot of praise for her like style and her looks, and I'm just like I don't really get it. Talk to me about all of your amazing tattoos.
Oh my God.
How many do you have?
I've lost count. Okay. I think probably around 60.
Oh my gosh.
I'm really covered. The first one I got was on the back. My father always said, thy body's thy temple. So I knew he would literally kill me if I got a tattoo. And I figured I'll just get the first one for him.
Okay.
And then maybe he won't just hate me.
Oh, I like that thinking.
So my godfather, in his eulogy at the end, had said, you'll always walk in the fields of my mind. So that's the first one I got.
Hmm.
And I grew up on a lot of Shakespeare. That was a big thing in my family. And so this arm is covered in Shakespeare quotes. I have from The Tempest, this thing of darkness, I acknowledge mine. And from Hamlet, Though this be madness, yet there be method in it. And of all base passions, fear is the most accursed.
Wow, you've got some deep quotes.
I love those ones. And then I recently, most recently got this one, which is, it says, for sale, baby shoes never worn. And it's a great story behind it. Hemingway was at the Algonquin. This is how the story goes. And they've not been able to disprove it or prove it, but I guess he was at the Algonquin amongst a group of people, and he said, I bet everyone at the table throw in $10. I bet I can write a novel with 6 words. Mm. And so they were like, there's no way. And he said that was his novel, For Sale, Baby Shoes Never Worn. Yeah, and it had a full story behind it. And it's the most incredible 6 words I think that there are. And he left with the pot that night. And I just think it's such a fun story and also just so touching. It just shows how, I mean, I'm a writer. So for me, the idea that, you know, we're given this gift of language and with such a concise expression, you can tell the story of an entire life.
Of course. For tattoos, mm-hmm. I have heard from people that, like, you can't just get two. Like,
oh, you're fucked. No, like, you're totally in. Once you're
in, you're open up a whole Pandora's box, and then you're, like, deep in it. So mm-hmm. did you feel, like, a compulsion immediately, like, once you got one, like, I need another and another and another?
Well, I will say that that is very true and mostly true among sober people, because once they're sober, it's like, what else do you do?
Interesting.
So you'll find a lot of people who were sober or have been or are who have absurd spiritual tattoos because they think, you know, they've just become spiritual. Like,
yes. Yeah. So did your sobriety coincide with you getting the tattoos?
I got them in sobriety because I was like, I didn't have anything to do. And I was like, you know what? I'm so proud of myself. I'll do it. So I got a few of them in sobriety. And that's when I'll say I really kind of felt that urge to get them often, but that died down. And then in the years to follow, I have gotten a lot. However, I'm like this with my writing. I'm spur of the moment. It would seem like it's unplanned, but I've never gotten one not sober. And even if it's spur of the moment, I've never regretted one. I tend to really know what I want. I got 2 Basquiat tattoos in the last year, which I'm really in love with.
That's cool.
And this is one of them. It says Sangro Song, and it's from one of his most famous paintings called In Italian. Sangro, he left out. Sangro was how you would say blood in Latin, mm-hmm. I believe. And this is the crossed out one is how you would say it in Italian. And I think his purpose, because most of his work had to do with racial divide, I think the purpose of that was to make it clear that in a time way before our modern language, blood was blood and blood is blood. And it doesn't matter what That's your deep. Color is, because we all bleed the exact same color. Mm. And I think that, you know, by crossing out the more modern version of the word, that was his way of saying
rejecting the modern notion of race.
I mean, that's what I take from it. I'm a huge Basquiat fan, so I should probably read more up on that. There probably are other theories, but to me, that's how that stood out. So,
I mean, Esme, you're so smart, and I'm just imagining. I would imagine that in LA, a guy comes and approaches you, like, you're like a hot, blonde, like, you're like the cute girl. And then when they start talking to you, they must just be like, oh shit, like, do you ever feel like, and I know that LA is not necessarily known for having the most intellectual, cultural.
I feel I surprise people.
Yes.
Quite
do you feel
often.
That? And yes. Do you ever feel like you have to almost dumb it down?
You know, I don't feel that way because I honestly think that I got to a point in LA where I was just like, take it or leave it. You know, it's, I will always have an opinion on things. I will always read the newspaper. I watch CNN 2 hours a day. And, you know, I can't cut the bullshit with people anymore. It's just like too much for me to try to fake it. But I will say that my first few years in LA, I definitely had to learn to not be as outspoken and stay a little quieter. Yeah. I can't remember necessarily dumbing myself down, but definitely learning to
accept,
sit back and listen a little bit more.
Sure.
And realize that, like, it might be a little overwhelming that I come from such a culture-based city.
Right,
we really grew up around it, whether
Yeah.
Whether you had money or not, you grew up in a real culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that LA is all, you know, namaste and relax and chill and good vibes only. And like, I'm going to my crystal energy healer and, you know, like the sun and the moon are aligned this way. So this is my mood. It's like a lot of like spiritual, like crap, which as a New Yorker, like you're like, you just reject. But I actually have learned to be a little bit more open to that and realize that, I mean, clearly they're doing something right in LA. Like every time I go there, I'm like, everyone here is happy and relaxed and like smiling. And so maybe what is, I feel like New Yorkers will wear stress as a badge. Like I'm so stressed. I'm so busy.
Right.
Almost as like something to be proud of.
That's very true. Actually, it's a really good way of putting it. I think it's so true. You know, I have to say, since I've come to LA, I'm a crystal person, but I'm also not, but I'm also like not a crazy crystal person. Like,
Can you tell me about the crystals? Cause I think they're pretty, but I know they have like healing
really
powers.
I think they're pretty. Yeah. I got into crystals a while ago simply cause I really love the way they look. I think they're beautiful.
Yeah, I think they're gorgeous.
And I think my view on everything in life is if you affirm something to yourself, then you motivate yourself. Now, whether belief and the laws of attraction or the power of everything, if you sleep next to a crystal and you think that that is going to work for you,
then it will.
Then it will. And
sure.
I've done crystal healings and crystal grids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't say I left feeling much different, but I do think they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love them around. I know that there are certain things that are such old science, you know, for lack of a better term, that how can I argue with them? I don't know.
Yeah. And it's like nature's energy.
Exactly. And it's really beautiful. And, you know, I even believe like if you are sitting down every night to pray, for instance, even if the person you are praying to doesn't exist, and even if really we're in a world where, let's say, praying to Jesus Christ doesn't exist, the actual affirmation of verbalizing those prayers is more important to your own psyche to get them answered. Because whether or not someone's listening to you, you're sitting down and you're affirming what you need and desire. And so I really think everything is like, you know, if you throw yourself into the belief without becoming really fucking crazy, like a lot of the people, like for instance, Mercury in retrograde, every time I've heard that, I've been in a great period of my life. So I'm like, everyone's like, Mercury's in retrograde. And I'm like, well, then maybe I'm a weirdo because like Mercury in retrograde is working out great for me.
What about one of the things that I notice also about LA is how much women have work done? And I'm actually not opposed to work. Mm-hmm. I actually have talked very openly on this podcast about my obsession with Restylane.
I did Restylane under my eyes.
Oh, wait, you do stuff? Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, we have to talk about it. Because I got Restylane like a year ago and I have not gotten it since. I got it under my eyes. It was like $600 for one syringe. And all I'm waiting for is like, let me just like save up so I can justify getting this again.
It's great.
So you do fillers and you do the whole thing. Can you tell me what you do?
Yes. So it's so funny. My mother has never put a needle in her face in her life. Like I come from a family that this is not a thing. I had, believe it or not, such incredibly bad frown lines at 22 because I had just been like, I literally was in a bad mood for like 22 years, I think. I went to this doctor with a friend of mine and she was getting something done. She's in her 30s. And I said, do you think I could, because I know it's preventative and all that stuff. And he looked at me and he was like, you need it. And this has been my doctor for years. And he's actually very conservative. But yeah, no, I got, I used to get something called Dysport, which is a much slower.
Heard of that.
It's like Botox, but it's a slower and much lighter chemical.
Okay. And where would you get it put?
I get it put here.
On your forehead?
On my forehead. And then I also have it put slightly under my eyebrows.
Ooh, like to raise the brow bone?
To raise them a little bit. And I've been doing that I only do every, like, you know, maybe twice a year or something.
Okay.
Because I found that actually it is preventative in the sense that I've needed it less and less. Mm-hmm. And I think that, listen, we don't know the science behind this. We don't know. Like, everyone says it's preventative, but in fact, because there's been enough time to test that, that might not be true. And as far as I'm concerned, Kylie Jenner's face might just fall off at one point. You know, there's just so much shit in it. It just might fall.
I know. And she's been doing it since she was so young.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, you know.
But a lot of girls in LA look, I mean, It's almost become the norm in this strange way where everyone
have huge lips to have these like, and so I'm gonna have Brooke touch my nose right now. I wish you guys could see. I had basically when I was younger, I didn't have a hook nose, but I had a slight indentation here, which made it look like a, you know, where you put your glasses.
Yep, kind of right there.
My mom has it too. And it was something that bothered me, but probably not anyone else. I'm terrified of surgery. I would never get a cosmetic surgery. It's just too scary to me. And honestly, the idea of waking up and looking in the mirror and being someone else is terrifying to me. I mean, and I totally get if you really need to change something. I was not that drastically concerned. So I got Restylane here and it has made my nose straight. You can actually feel.
Let me see.
Here, just pinch this. That's not bone.
Oh my gosh.
And look from the side, and then I have it here at the tip of my nose, so it creates the illusion.
Wow.
It's just all an illusion. And I basically get to do it once a year, just a little bit.
That's amazing.
And it's like I've gotten my nose straightened without having them break it and put a whole new thing in, you know?
Interesting.
So there are some like fun tricks that I really think are not that sinful, you know?
Oh my gosh, I think I'm trying to get more into it.
When I see young girls going and doing their cheeks and things like that, I get very nervous.
Cheeks,
like,
what do you do to your cheeks?
I think a lot of people, you know, older women like to fill their cheeks because they become gaunt, but now a
I
lot
think
of
gaunt
young women.
Kind of looks cool.
I love gaunt, and right? I think like, it's really like sexy. I think, and, you know, my mom's never done any of this. So I see her and I think, oh, you look so great. You look really like you aged gracefully. And, But I do understand why some women would feel the need to add some more fat to their face. But when you see these young girls doing it, like Kylie Jenner, like having, you know, these big puffy like cheeks, just get so nervous that come 33, you've had so much stuff injected. Where does it go? I know it dissipates at some point, but it's like, is it going to make it like, that seems so like heavy in your skin. Like the idea is to me, it's like, it's supposed to pull it up. But you're still adding like a ton of liquid into your skin.
Yeah. Oof.
It's a strange concept.
It is.
And then I've had my lips done. Ooh, we're just getting real honest on here. If anyone wants to date after this, like, please let me know.
Wait, so you did Restylane for your lips or?
The first thing I ever did was Juvederm.
Juvederm, okay.
And I noticed that about after 2 weeks, it had gone back completely to normal.
Right.
And so and when you first get your lips done, they really blow up because they really have to cover all areas versus now I get maybe like one or two injections.
And how often do you have to do it?
I don't. Now it's come to a point where I think I've reached kind of where I want to be. So I'll do a maintenance once a year.
Once a year.
Maybe like just a few injections. But yeah, I did Juvederm. I think that the chemical didn't take to me.
Okay.
So then I did Juvederm Plus for a few years and now I'm on a product called Silk,
which is fantastic.
It's very soft. You can even feel like my top lip is almost like you wouldn't really
Esme's lips are pillowy soft and they look very natural.
And yeah, Silk I love and they put it in laugh lines too. Oh. And any place that you want
my mind is blown right now. Like, it looks also natural and good. I think I've always been put off by the cost, but I think
it's worth it in the sense that like you, first of all, you have to find a doctor that will save your syringe. So my Silk syringe is very expensive, but I'll use it in 3 goes. So then when I kind of deal with that, it's like, okay, $400 a time.
Yeah.
In reality, that's, you know, 2 haircuts and it lasts more
sure.
It's like, to me, it's like, but my doctor will save the syringe for me, which is great.
Do you ever worry that you'll lose perspective in terms of, right? Because we can fix anything. We can look in the mirror and say, okay, I want to raise this. I want to plump this. I want to fill this in. Do you ever worry that over time you could lose perspective and then start doing things that would make you look unnatural?
I don't think I'm as concerned because I think that the times when that happens, those are the people that are so maybe scared that all they have to offer is their looks.
Mm-hmm.
That those are, you know, it's like you find all these models who were so beautiful and they refused to age. They refuse to give that up versus I have a lot more things important to me. I like to look a certain way, but by no means do I obsess. And I do think it really, the women that you see that have that happen to tend to be the women who don't have careers, who base everything off looks, and they cannot handle aging. And so what they do is they decide to age in what they think is the most graceful way and it ends up looking just horrific.
Graceful, AKA holding on to youth for dear life.
I mean, for dear life. And also what I'll say about, I do think it is preventative in the sense that in the last couple of years since getting my first round of injections in my forehead, I do it much less often.
Yeah.
And I think that when women are getting it at like 50 who haven't done it, I think that's when it starts to look fake. You know, I think almost starting young and doing it very slowly and getting in with a good doctor if you do want to do it is the way to go because
interesting.
That's when women look frozen, you know, and it's like, I think they look, I think those women look frozen because they're dealing with attacking 90 wrinkles versus maybe like a few.
A few. Interesting.
Amy Schumer did a stand up and I'm going to misquote her right now, but it was something along the lines of how when she moved to LA, she was all of a sudden just kind of blown away because she said, I think it was something like, she was like, when you're in LA, you realize that every girl you meet was someone from like Bumblefuck where they were like, Pamela, you're too pretty to be here.
So true.
Go to LA. So you're just surrounded by these like beautiful people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Does it ever make you feel insecure?
The beauty of people in LA? To a certain extent, I definitely, when I gained a lot of weight, it did. But then again, another weird thing about LA is there are very well-known prostitutes that are like part of social circles.
What?
Oh yeah, it's something that's so different here. I
like
call girls that are really well-known and that are completely okay with society. And there are ones that are amongst friend groups of mine, and it's just very strange.
But you know what? I guess to be fair, we assign so much judgment around women who sleep with men for money, but some women do it indirectly, and they're getting a check, and I'm sure they're making, you know, as long as they're okay with it morally,
who are we to judge? I had sexual trauma when I got raped when I was 17.
Oh my gosh. And so I didn't know that. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine because I've really grown from it. And so for me, the idea of sleeping with someone, and even I think before that happened, the idea of sleeping with someone who I didn't want to sleep with. I mean, even the idea of kissing, it was so appalling to me. But I can't judge people based on their hard wiring. Maybe some people that doesn't bother so much. I also think, though, that very often it becomes an addiction. It becomes like, I don't really want to do it. I don't really want to do it. You do it once. You receive that Birkin. And you know, and a lot of people have never taken, and it's like, okay, you know what? I can close my eyes and do it again. And I think that's what's happened. So my heart goes out to these girls and I have no judgment, but it's just a very different thing out there. It's kind of socially acceptable. I mean, they even said Demi Moore and Sharon Stone were both really well known for that, you know?
Okay. Tell me the top three. Okay. Do you want to start with the three beauty trends that you hate and like want to see go away forever or your favorite beauty products of all time?
Okay, so I'm very bad with trends. I had to look some up today, actually,
okay.
because I just don't know what to call them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that as much as I kind of enjoy them on the runway or enjoy them in, because they're fun and they're glittery, I can't, the bedazzled boots and stuff, they've got to go.
Why is everything so shiny and sparkly now?
It's just so aggressive. Like, we're not at Studio 54. It's so aggressive. And like, yes, there's a part of me that wants the YSL boots. And then when I saw that they were
$10,000,
I literally was like, okay, so maybe some of this is from jealousy that I can't have them, maybe. But at the same time,
if they
pop
up on the real reel, will you buy them?
No, I think I'm past it. The glitter, I've never been a glitter person.
Yeah. But, and also I feel like there's like the glitter trend plus that app that everyone uses with like the sparkle effect. The combination
of
the two.
Girls using filters is my worst nightmare.
Ooh.
Don't, like, I'll do a stupid filter maybe once in a while, but if you are posting, not on your story, but on your Instagram, puppy ears, this has got to stop.
Oh, my gosh, like the Snapchat filters.
It's like, let me tell you something, guys think you are an idiot.
Yeah. Oh, that, yes.
Guys hate it.
Yeah. The dog ears, the bunny ears.
It's just like.
Yeah, it's lame.
It's so lame.
It's not a good look.
It's so lame. What I do really like is I like that I know it's being called Power Red. I was told that today, but I like the red that's on the runway because I'm a big red girl.
I love red too.
And I love an orangey red.
Me too.
Like I don't like a blue red and I just think it's such a great color.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm super happy about that. And Victorian collars.
Ooh, I really like am a nice liking high collar.
Those. Yeah. And I've also gotten a lot of velvet, which I normally am not super into. And I love it. I'm very into that recently.
Velvet's nice.
The jeans that I think are sort of on their way out that aren't, I don't know how do I describe them? I have a lot of like frayed skinny jeans, but the ones that kind of bell out at your mid.
Oh, like the cropped and flared.
Cropped and flared. Unless it's
we've
a
had
trouser.
Enough. Yeah.
And a trouser can be so beautiful. Yeah. And it's, you know, if it's like a beautiful like orange crap, go for it. But yeah. But the jeans gotta go. It's just too much. And it's also like, jeans should always remain somewhat classic, and it's okay to wear them. But when every single other person on the street's wearing them, it's got to stop.
It's too much.
It's just silly.
I agree.
The products that I love right now are Natura Bisse, the diamond line. It's very expensive, unfortunately, but it does last. And you know what I think? Sometimes when you see a cream and it says over $100, you're like, you know, that's crazy. But when you think about it, you're buying jeans for over $100. Every time you use it, I try to deduct like that. If I'm going to use the cream 50 times this year, then it's not that bad. Peter Thomas Roth, anything.
Yeah.
Especially, not sure what they're exactly called, but the acne clearing dots. I mean, I really look like a Liechtenstein when I got on a plane. Like, I just cover myself. They're amazing. Amazing, amazing. And one more product that I'm really obsessed with.
What makeup products do you use? I feel like your skin looks flawless.
Oh, I have so much makeup on. I use Shiseido. Is it Shiseido?
Shiseido, yeah.
Shiseido concealer and this Kevin O'Con.
Oh, yes. Kevin Aquan, I think. Aquan,
yeah. I just literally went to, I didn't go to Sephora the other day. I had to go get some stuff and I went to my normal beauty store and they only have a small section of.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, oh, I'm not working for them. I swear. I'm just like pushing his
Kevin
product.
Aquan is amazing.
It is amazing. It's all I have on my face right now.
Wait, really?
Mm-hmm.
I use all of the Kevin Aquan concealers and I'm obsessed with them because they have such good coverage.
Well, do you have the primer in the little squeezy?
I don't have the primer.
Okay. There is like a circular, it looks like a moisturizer and you like pinch it down to get the stuff to come out. And basically you take the concealer, you add it to the primer, mush it around and it becomes foundation. And it is just
that's
amazing.
Brilliant.
Because I have very oily skin, so I need a mattifying primer.
Okay.
And I was born without eyebrows, like literally, so I paint these on.
I did, what's it called? The eyebrow tattooing thing.
Okay, so I got to go to your place.
Yeah, it's like a game, but it's a game changer because I was born without eyebrows.
My eyebrows like stop here. It's like
microblading, it's called. I don't know why I'm blanking on it.
Well,
and actually,
no, yours looks so great.
Thank
you. Because
I
know a lot of people that I would be like, but
no,
I need to
okay.
go to your place.
It's a game changer. Do microblading. I can't recommend it. Enough.
I'm going to do it because it's just the one thing. I used to do fake lashes and I literally pulled them out every
time. Fake lashes, it's a spiral. It's an addiction spiral.
And every time I would, it was like almost like euphoric recall. Like I would literally be like, oh, they weren't that bad.
Yeah, you get
them
again.
I would do it again. Yeah. And then I'd realize I exfoliate every day. So I need to scrub my face. I can't stand not being able to. And every time I have no patience, I pull them all out and I look like a fish.
And it also damages your own eyelashes. Yeah.
The Kevin O'Con, it's actually what I'm wearing right now. And I think it has added so much body to
my
lashes.
Mascara.
It's great.
It looks really good.
It's just like I use it every day and I feel like it looks like I have fake lashes on.
Yeah, no, it looks really good. And you have bottom lashes, which I'm so jealous about. I was like born hairless. Like I don't have.
Oh my God, I didn't have an armpit hair growing until I was 17.
Yeah, like I don't grow hair. And some
people
are like, oh my gosh, I'm so jealous. And I'm like, yeah, but like I also don't have eyebrows and I also don't have like thick lashes.
Are like, oh, it's so nice. You don't, because I shave every day because I'm like anal retentive, but like I don't need to at all. Like I shave my arms, I shave my legs. And people are always like, you're so lucky. And I'm like, but wait, like the places I want, like the lashes, the hair growth takes a long time. Like,
right. Yeah.
Everything.
Okay. Last question.
Yes.
When do you feel most beautiful?
When do I feel most beautiful? I have a lot of anxiety and insecurity. So I have to say, I feel most beautiful on a day I feel confident. It really has nothing to do with my looks. I mean, of course, I need to really conceal my pimples and stuff like that. But it's, I think it's the days that I just feel my best and I feel like I have something to offer and I feel like I'm, because there, I'm very, you know, I'm a weird artist. There are days I'm really quiet, I'm very moody. But like even tonight, like I could have come in sweatpants and I feel so confident and happy to be here that those are the days. Like I think confidence, Lil Wayne said confidence is a stain you can't wipe off. And I'm really a true believer of that. I think confidence is the best thing you can wear.
Totally. Okay, we're going to end on that Lil Wayne quote. Amazing. Thank you so much, Esme, for coming.
Thank you for inviting me.
You'll have to come back so we can talk more.
I have to just end this also by saying that when Brooke came to Spence, I was younger than her, and she literally was, I think, my biggest girl crush. Like, I was too scared to even go up to you in the hallway, and I was just like, this girl, if she doesn't work at Vogue now, she's going to. I mean, she literally was... the most, you just never have seen a more perfectly dressed person in your entire life.
You're so
it's
sweet.
Just amazing. I'm like so honored to be here tonight. I called my boyfriend. I was like, my girl crush actually wants to talk to me.
That's so sweet. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it. We'll have to do it again.
Why is it so hard to accept the party is over? You came with your new friends and her mom jeans and her new fans, and she's perfect and I hate it. Oh, so glad you made it. I'm so glad you could come back. Somebody get the tacos.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.